You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of May 8th, 2013. And this week, George and I are using the magic of the internet to talk to you about magic in video games.
Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. My name is George Albor.
My name is Scott Juster.
And we are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a site dedicated to the serious, but not humorless, analysis of games, culture, the dark arts, if you will.
Necromancy is what I've taken up.
Today on the podcast, we're talking about magic in games. And this week we're inspired by an article called I Hate Magic by Robert Rath, who I'm pretty sure is a dark sorcerer himself.
Yeah, I mean, I thought I knew a lot about magic, what with my robe and wizard hat, but Robert...
Which you're wearing right now, by the way.
Yeah, he clearly has me beat.
So Robert brings this article via The Escapist to talk about why he's unhappy with the way that magic is represented in video games today. And for the most part, I think he's right. The way that he describes magic is that it's just another thing. It's like a gun, it's like a pistol, it's like any other piece of equipment you have in your inventory. Magic is a tool for you to use. You just shoot it from your hand and shit catches on fire.
Mm-hmm.
But his understanding of magic is very different. He is coming from this grounded sense of magic, a sense of magic that is inspired by such occultists as Aleister Crowley that uses symbolism and conceptualization of ideas to implant and ideas in your head and change the world, things like that. Mm-hmm. Symbols are important to him. Rarity is important to him. So Robert goes into some great detail about what he thinks is a better way to deal with magic, and I think it's a really interesting article because we do have magic. It's funny because we talk about first-person shooters and we talk about guns all of the time, but magic is probably, what, the second most common way of interacting with the world in games?
Yeah, I mean, it's... And even then, it's like basically the same thing as a gun, except, like you were saying, you're like blasting a lightning bolt out of your hand. And, you know, it's like the whole... The heritage of Dungeons & Dragons is still running really strong in video games.
Yeah, but what's interesting that I think that Rath correctly points out is that a lot of the stuff that inspired Magic today, right, that old-school D&D has been left behind.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Rath specifically talks about how Magic is just too common in video games. It's just everywhere, right? Not just in a lot of games, but within the game universes, mm-hmm. Magic is just, it flows like a river, right? Like, everyone and their next-door neighbor has access to magic.
Yeah.
But old school D&D, magic was somewhat rare, right? You could have people in your group who didn't have magical powers. Not everyone was able to wield, like, flames out of their hands, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all of that magic came at a cost.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And I think that's also, again, like, it's, like you were saying, it's, you know, the problem that many games have with magic is the problem that they have with pretty much every single resource in the game, because games are, for better or worse, we expect them to be like many, many hours long.
Uh-huh.
And so if you were able to have a game where it was only like, you know, 1 hour or something, and you used a spell one time, that would, you know, that'd have a huge impact. There'd be a lot of investment in that. Right. But, you know, even a game that's 5 or 10 hours, you'll likely do the same spell over and over again, just the same way that you'll randomly find guns and bullets in most video games.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I was thinking about magic, like a magic version of Receiver, because I'm still obsessed with that game.
This is the slow and plodding shooter, if you will, where you have to, like, empty out the case and turn the safety off and all that.
Yeah, it's like the real mechanics of shooting, where, you know, if you don't properly... you know, pull the hammer back, the gun won't shoot.
Right.
And so, you know, you have to, like, think about the actual system of what you're doing. And, you know, like most, and unlike most shooters, like, the game just won't work if you don't do that. Mm-hmm. You know, think about, like, a magic version of that where you have to research or you have to, you know, learn like an arcane series of commands to do it. Like, actually there's a game called Magicka where that is kind of the point of the game.
Yeah, I really want to talk about Magicka because I think Magicka has a really cool system that I you know, it's about these mages. Of course they can shoot fire from their fingertips. But it does something that's so much cooler because you can combine spells, both your own and in a team, mm-hmm. and it allows an immense amount of creativity. And that type of creativity is exactly what's interesting, or at least it's partially what's interesting about spells, right? Like, you take a goat's tongue and, like, liver of newt or something, combine it, and you make some crazy thing with a little augmentation. Who knows what you can get?
And because it's, you know, it's a game that you can play with other people, there's that social element of it where, like Robert is saying, you know, it's in, you know, real societies, magic is part of like a broader knowledge base. You know, you have to right. learn it instead of just kind of accepting it as a button you can turn off and on. Mm-hmm. And so, like you were saying, like in Magicka, I mean, I have barely played the game, but, you know, you can see some people are really good at it, and they've internalized the combinations, they've internalized the spells, and so they become, like, the wizened wizards, yeah. you know?
Yeah. They're the Dumbledore of Magicka.
Yeah, and, like, that's how they pass it on to other people. You know, you don't have to necessarily read a fact, you can actually learn it socially.
Yeah. One of the other cool things about Magicka, too, is that Rath sounds like he's sentimental for a type of magic that is mysterious and unknown and almost uncontrollable in a way. Mm-hmm. And Magicka, while you are basically firing machine guns of magic, the fact that you don't necessarily know what combinations will do have what results means that you do accidentally bump into really cool combinations.
Yeah.
And you feel like not just that you're using magic, but that you've invented it. Right? Mm-hmm. That you're like brewing a new potion of destruction every time that you combine a set of spells and find that they actually are really amazing and you want to use them all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the major problem is actually a very similar problem to just how to convey the idea of skill and knowledge in video games without it, you know, because some people don't want it to be overly mechanistic, like they want that right. that mystery to it. But the problem is that mystery will either turn off most players because it requires such a huge investment. Mm-hmm. And then it's also really hard to measure. You know, like, how do you measure success? And, you know, unless you're the type of person that wants to just kind of stumble around and figure out how to make all these spells, like, as in something like, you know, Minecraft or Don't Starve or something like that.
Right.
You know, it's just really hard to get that type of investment from people, I feel like.
Yeah. I mean, how much do you think Dishonored creates that system? Because to some extent, you can't really unlock your magical powers unless you put in the effort to find these like little trinkets hidden around every level, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think Dishonored is a pretty mainstream example, but there are certain things in Dishonored where, you know, you're not quite sure what the spells will do. And then once you have them, you have to, you know, you have to figure out how best to use them and yeah. whether you want to keep upgrading them, which is kind of...
And you can combine them as well.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, it's... And the game, you know, the game somewhat shows you how to do that, but it's also like, well, you know, it'll reward you if you experiment, but it's a pretty harsh one because you can learn a spell that you realize you didn't want to learn and you've expended your finite resources and, well, you know, that's pretty much it, you know?
Yeah, no take backs.
Yeah, but I mean, like, kind of on a more... I guess on a more sociological level, I did appreciate the way that manifested in Dishonored. Mm-hmm. It wasn't clear whether it was good or bad. It was just like another part of the world.
Right.
Even though the other, or whatever that guy's name was kind of, you know, it's kind of like a generic, like, stranger type character that's in a lot of different mythologies.
Right, right.
You know, it was something that, like, oh, you know, this could be a positive or negative thing, and also people in the world acknowledge it as another aspect of the world.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, I think in many ways, Dishonored manages to be the sort of, yeah, you're right, the regular way that we deal with magic, right? Gun in one hand, flames in the other. But those little touches do sort of put it in the wheelhouse that was D&D, in the sense that it's got meaning because you make that choice, right? Like in old school D&D, mages had to memorize their spells every morning, right? So you might have a huge book of spells, 32 spells or more, right? But you only get 4 that day, so good luck. Which ones do you want to remember?
Yeah.
And that's meaningful because if you start your day out with like, okay, I'm gonna take this fire spell, and then you're fighting, I don't know, fire elementals or something, you realize, oh, I've made this huge mistake. I should have thought more carefully about what combinations of spells I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
All of that creates a sort of a serious repercussions for your decisions, and I think that is something that's clearly missing from magic in games.
Yeah. Yeah, and like that's just like a video game problem, you know, like how do you make things finite but also approachable enough that people just won't quit?
Right.
Or if that's you're fine with people like mostly quitting and only like the very hardest core of people continuing to play.
The true Magi.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is I think it's really interesting that you mentioned that Magic is similar to playing games where you find ammo everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And there are games where you don't find ammo everywhere, and those are usually like horror games, right? Survival horror games. So don't you think that you could pretty easily take a complex system of Magic complete with reagents you have to use and find, and yeah. just embed that into a survival horror game, and now all of a sudden, like, it's sort of the same way, right? Like, it's sort of one-on-one, where it's hard to find weapons, and when you find them, you have to use them sparingly, and it's hard to find reagents, and when you mm-hmm. want to use spells or magic, you have to do it rarely.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been a few games, like, every once in a while, a game like, I don't know, Eternal Darkness or something will come along where you'll have to, you know, experiment with how different things are positioned, and, you know, it's not necessarily better to have a sword versus a spell.
Right.
And then, like, once you can solve, like, once you've, like, dedicated yourself to solving that problem or making that choice, like, the question then becomes how to make that an important part of the game's fiction rather than just, you know, another tool to use.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think Robert, you know, he had some pretty interesting examples of, you know, how, you know, there's, like, mechanistic magic, you know, or simple sorcery versus, you know, more complex sorcery that has, like, you know, abstract things that cause other things to happen, like sacrifices or, you know, creating, you know, effigies or stand-ins or something like that.
Right, right. I've got a slew of effigies in my room right now.
So. Are they complex or simple? Are you just jamming pins into them to...
Oh, yeah, it's just pins, yeah.
That would explain my back.
I'm trying to help you, Scott. It's acupuncture. Long-distance acupuncture.
I mean, when I was reading his examples, I was thinking about, you know, I didn't really study this too heavily in college, but, you know, like, Hana was really...
You didn't take an intro to witchcraft and wizardry?
I got expelled from Hogwarts.
You had to go to Bogwarts. That's
yeah, that's state school.
The junior wizard college.
It's, you know, like she was a religious studies major, so she probably knows a bit more about this than I do. But, you know, the idea that it's tied up in how one would, you know, your conception of the world, like you have the human aspect, you have, you know, the somewhat like, you know, mortal aspect of the world. Then you have this like spiritual aspect that isn't necessarily more or less true, but is just another part of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's hard to simulate that type of cultural component in video games because we're so focused on the literal meaning of everything. Like, what does it mean to have magic or fire? It means you can burn things. It says nothing about your spirituality, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the big thing that's missing, right? Is this connection to some sense of spirituality or divinity.
Yeah.
I mean, old school D&D, if you were a priest or a cleric... your powers are coming from a god. Like, that god is real. You yeah. can see him. He could manifest on Earth and you could just high five, right? And if you piss him off or her off, you don't get those spells anymore. You lose a level. You do, you know, all sorts of things. So if you're not someone who follows their faith strictly in, you know, advanced Dungeons and Dragons, it is very possible for you to lose access to all of the magical abilities, right? And that sense that they have a source... and it's a source that you can interact with, is really engaging. And it makes for really cool narrative moments as well, because you make certain decisions that affect you, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have tons of games where choices matter, right? But not a ton of games where your choices matter mechanically. Mm. And Magic seems like a really easy way to create that connection, right? Imagine a game like Call of Duty, right? But instead of guns, there's spells. And mm-hmm. if you don't pray every 30 minutes and the game won't remind you, then you start losing access to some of your abilities.
Yeah. Right?
That's pretty cool. That could be really a really neat experience where you're constantly having to express the character's spirituality. Or maybe even you can change your spirituality and worship something else, right?
Ramirez, set up these votive candles!
Yeah, I mean, it's somewhat similar to Bastion in a way, right? Like,
I was just gonna say that, yeah.
Because there's just the idea of worshiping different shrines and changing the way you play it's a, you know, it's a simple narrative twist, but I think it's a cool one because mm-hmm. every time that you add one of those, you're thinking, okay, I am doing this in honor of such and such God. It fits so well narratively into the world.
Yeah, I like that as well. I mean, just the idea that if you want the blessing of the bull, you know, if you want that extra strength boost or whatever, it's also going to cost you some of the favor of the others, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's great because it does tie it into what you're actually doing in the game, but it you know, makes it so that it makes sense that the character would understand the world in that way.
Yeah.
The other games I was thinking about was the Souls games, Dark Souls and Demon Souls.
Oh, yeah.
Because
magic, I mean, magic is unknown to you, right, at first. You've got to earn it.
Depending on what character you are, which is interesting.
Oh, because you can roll as a mage and you're just ready to go?
Exactly, yeah. And, like, I remember when I was playing Demon Souls, I realized that I needed... It's funny, it was kind of a social thing. I was like, oh, wow, like, a huge chunk of this world is about spells. And, like, how I understood this world was different from what it is now. Like, I thought this was just going to be slashing and hacking all the time. Right. And, like, there are things that aren't just about fireballs. Like, I need... you know, a certain amount of clarity to use the spell, and I need, like, some support spells and stuff, and, like, I needed to basically, like, go back to magic school in the middle of that game and relearn all the stuff that I had ignored.
Oh, that sounds painful.
It was pretty painful.
Yeah.
Because I died a million times along the way.
All magic has a cost.
So. Yes.
I would really be interested to hear what Robert has to say about Skyrim. And he mentions it a little bit in the article. But Skyrim does a few things bad, and I think a few things really good, right? Mm. The bad being Fustro Da just comes out of your mouth, and it's super easy, and you're Dragonborn, and that's that.
Mm.
But there's also shrines in the world where if you pray to a certain god, it'll give you a bonus, a magical boost or what have you, which is kind of a neat way to add the narrative touch of religion in the game. Added to the fact that you can do all sorts of these Elder God quests throughout it. And I also just really like the fact that you improve your magic through use, right? Mm-hmm. It's not something where you just buy a scroll and, hey, I've upgraded to level 2, you know, magical torch or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
The more you use it, the higher your ability power or the stronger you get at your use of magic. And that's kind of a neat way to naturalize that growth process without being too jarring.
Yeah, yeah. How did you like the... you know, the actual calls when you do magic? Like, that's something he was saying was, you know, it separated it because it invokes a, like, another layer of importance to it if you have to put words to it.
Yeah, I mean, I like it, right? I've always been really interested in magic, and I've read some sort of, I mean, in college, everyone has that, right? Everyone has their dark arts occult phase.
Yeah.
Where you start reading up on Aleister Crowley before you realize he's, like, terribly racist and stuff. yeah, I mean, the idea of having symbols and having importance to the words that you say is totally important. Yeah. He mentions in the article Harry Potter, those Harry Potter Connect games. And he's right. Like, I think the act of drawing something in the air gives it more meaning, even if it's something that's simple, right? Ni No Kuni uses, like, symbols. For their magic, and although you just click it whenever you want to use a spell or what have you, the fact that it shows you the drawing and you've got this sort of magical tome that you can browse and look through gives significance to what you're drawing or gives significance to what you're casting, because it implies a sort of bounded reality to the magic. It's not coming from nowhere. It's coming from a system of rituals that are, you know, theoretically and narratively ancient.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like it's one of the ways that you know, I think a lot of video games are reluctant to deal with religion head on in terms of, like, the dominant monotheistic religions. You know, people are a bit worried of getting too heavy-handed with, you know, Christian, Judaic, or Islamic allegories because, you know, it's kind of a lightning rod thing for people to do.
No, you don't say.
Yeah, but, I mean, now that, you know, a huge portion of the world is you know, no longer invested in, like, a day-to-day relationship with, like, a pantheon, it becomes a way for people to explore those things a bit more easily with video games.
Yeah, totally.
You know, you don't have to worry about that in something like Bastion. You're probably not going to offend your main audience if you have this strange pantheon, you know?
Yeah. I think something like Game of Thrones is a really good example of how to do magic right.
Mm-hmm.
Especially considering that so much of the story in the books is about these clashes of religions and the way that divinity touches on people's lives. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, magic is really rare in that universe. But it's still such a driving force. So when it appears, it's so important. Mm-hmm. And it affects everything. So even in scenes where there's not magic, you're aware that behind this veil is like a world of mysticism and divine power.
Well, there's also because it's not obvious, there's always this constant question of, is this priest a fraud or is he actually summoning something?
Right, exactly.
Because it's not obvious, it's like, oh, he could just be fooling everybody, you know?
Right, yeah. I mean, it's Game of Thrones is awesome, period. But I think adding that level of magic to a world and you know, like you said, religion still plays a major role in everyone's day-to-day lives. So it's neat to see someone addressing religion and addressing magic, but it's not over the top, it's not frivolous, it's not silly.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I liked it. It's very similar to your Game of Thrones example of like how the Demon Souls and Dark Souls worlds handle religion, because you could go through those entire games as someone just on the fringes, you know, like you could be like the Ned Stark equivalent, where like he can't cast spells, you know, he hacks with a sword, you know, that's how he lives his life, but he's still impacted by a world in which this is a real thing that you have to deal with.
Yeah.
It's like you can go through Demon Souls as a knight the whole time and like make your way with armor and your wits instead of, you know, your spiritual knowledge. But the world, you know, the world won't accommodate itself for you. You have to make your way in that world instead, you know?
Yeah, totally. I mean, there's a similar strain in a lot of urban fantasy novels, particularly like the young adult ones, right? Where you're living in a normal, gritty world, everything kind of sucks, but then there's magic, and it's in the background, or maybe it's even powerful, but it's something that you just sort of have to deal with. And people who aren't used to magic, like maybe another example would be the White Wolf series, like Werewolf or Vampire the Masquerade or Mage, right? Mm-hmm. You can play that game as just some dude, as like a vampire hunter, a regular human. He's got a badass crossbow and some training, right? Mm-hmm. And you're living in a world that's just full of magic, and you just sort of have to deal with it.
Yeah. What do you think about Mass Effect?
It's magical. What do you...
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I was just... This idea just popped in my head, but I mean, like... Yeah.
I mean, it's all sci-fi, right?
Yeah, but I mean, like, the whole, like, biotics thing, it's like, it's kind of a similar, you know... Maybe it's not as spiritual, or maybe it is. I don't know. I haven't really decided yet. But, you know, there's, like, that idea that this is just something else you have to deal with as part of the world, whether or not you are directly involved in it. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure if it's the same as what Robert is talking about here in terms of, like, the ritualistic side of things, you know?
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily ritualistic in any way. I do think it's interesting that early in the game, when you first play like Mass Effect 1, right, you make a choice about what class you want to play, and mm-hmm. you can change that class between Mass Effect 2 and Mass Effect 3, but once you've made your choice, you're stuck with that. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not going to get some of the cool abilities that some of the biotics have unless you roll as a full biotic.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really neat. But again, for the most part, it's something that's just sort of dressing on top. Mm-hmm. Although I would say it's somewhat similar to your Dark Souls answer, because you're going to be fighting biotics.
Yeah.
Even if you're full military, you know that some people are going to be able to basically teleport into you or slam into you, all things like that.
Yeah. Hmm. So what do we think for the future? What are we looking for in terms of magic?
Real magic?
Yeah.
Would be nice.
Teleportation? Yeah.
Teleportation, portals. I mean, you know, I was actually going to say, I think antechamber is somewhat magical of an experience.
Is there a line between surrealism and magic? Because, like, you know, the way that Robert describes it is like the alternate side of the coin to science, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're not really that similar, right? Or that separate, in my opinion, right? At the moment you don't understand it and it's something that you just sort of have to take faith in, then it's sort of magical, right? I mean, there's that famous... What is it, Arthur C. Clarke?
Yeah, right.
Any science significantly advanced enough is indistinguishable from magic.
Right, right.
Same thing goes there, right? And the same thing applies to any sci-fi. Mm-hmm. I think any of the criticisms or the blessings that we can take from Rath's article, we can apply to science fiction games as well.
Yeah, which is, I guess, why like I'm coming around to the idea of, you know, to really appreciate it in the deeper way that you know, the article suggests is that maybe something like Minecraft or Don't Starve is like really the key, you know, like you have to earn everything. You have to really internalize it. It's not just something that you can pick up and use right away. It's something that you have to make hard choices about. Like, maybe that's the way to do it.
Yeah. For that type of magic. Totally. And if you're willing to take that risk, right? Because like you said, I think it can only fit in certain game experiences.
Yeah.
You're not going to get Call of Duty where you're like setting up votive candles or whatever. But you might get something that's like Don't Starve. You might get a horror game where I think it could really fit well. And we always make fun of Kinect, but if voice really worked well, I think magic could be awesome.
Yep.
Because it could require you to actually vocalize your spells in that way. And like we said, even if our in-game characters vocalize it, it already adds meaning to the experience.
Yeah.
So if you had to vocalize it, if you had to actually memorize spells on the fly... Like, imagine you're playing Far Cry, right? And you've got a spell book, but the game doesn't pause when you're looking at it.
Yeah.
And so you have to memorize whatever verbal combinations you want to use in order to cast those spells, or you're going to have to take the risk mid-combat to look at your spell book and decide what you want to do. That could be really neat and a meaningful experience if done right.
I mean, that it's weird. It's kind of meta to think about, but that is essentially what video games... Well, what they were, they're less so now because we're just much better at tutorializing and making things very clear for people. But like when you were trying to like memorize all of the fatalities in the original Mortal Kombat, like there was nothing That's written true. Down anywhere, you know, like you had to really like transmit that. And it's like it's a spell in the same way that, you know, like sacrificing a thing to another thing might theoretically change something. But it's like. Really, you know, it's not like there's no ghost in the room. There's like various other social tricks that are happening. It's like there's nothing magic about doing the fatality. It's the knowledge that's powerful. You know?
Knowledge and execution for sure. Yeah. Video games are magic is what you're saying.
We've cracked it.
I mean, I'm pretty certain that people really good at fighting games have sold their soul to the devil or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Or at least, you know, one of the more devilish, more MK characters like Smoke or something.
Yep, yep. And, you know, we've also established that friendship is magic. Because we need to talk about My Little Pony again.
Again? Oh, wait, no, we deleted that podcast. Week. We did? Oh, no, yeah, that was your favorite game. I forgot.
But yeah, Goaty 2013, or Horsey, whatever. Pony.
All right. We will. You know, before we reveal all the mysteries, let's wrap it up there. And, you know, as always, if you have any thoughts or questions or anything you want to get in touch about experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And if you want to send us an owl, experiencepoints.net is the website. Owls can't go there because it's a website, but you can bring your friends, check out our posts, leave your comments on this podcast.
All right, until next time, thanks everyone for listening, really appreciate it, and we'll talk to you next week.
So long. Every time we disagree, there's a place to go to.